your state sum over all possible values. And as a result, the matrix element of your density matrix is just path integral over entire space with a cut along A, okay, where you specify some boundary conditions. So after analytic continuation, you get just a sphere with a cut here, with a cut where you have phi minus and phi plus. Now, what is nice about this space, this construction, first of all, it was used for a conformal field theory. It was, I think, used by Robert Myers and Aninda Sinha. They used some replica trick to show back in the days to show that for a conformal field theory and for this construction, entanglement entropy is proportional to central charge A at the fixed point. Okay, but what is nice? So what is nice specifically about this setup is that in the transfer space, so this is an entangling surface, it's just two points here, but in principle it's S d minus 2, okay, d minus 2. And what is nice about it is that it has rotational symmetry in the transfer space. So basically this picture shows you the transfer space. The transfer space has topology of S2, okay? And this is the entangling surface is point-like in this, in the transfer space. And it has rotational symmetry. Rotational symmetry around the surface. And since it has rotational symmetry, you can construct your path integral. You can think about this matrix element. So, phi plus rho phi minus. You can think about it as just path, as just evolution, angular evolution around the entangling surface. So this is basically just a slight generalization of Kabat-Strassler idea to this particular setup of the Sitter space. So Kabat-Strassler, those who are not familiar, did the same actually exercise in early 90s for Rindler space or for flat plane in flat space. Okay, so here you have more or less the same realization, but in the Sitter space, and since it has rotational symmetry, you also know how the entanglement Hamiltonian looks like. So by definition, this is the definition of entanglement Hamiltonian. Okay. So you know how the entanglement Hamiltonian looks like. It just, okay, let us add here 2 pi for those. So entanglement Hamiltonian is just a rotation, angular rotation operator in this setup. So it is given by k equals 2 pi k mu nu xi mu and nu, where the integral runs over this region A. And of course, you have to add here some constant in general, because by assumption, our density matrix is normalized to 1. So we assume that trace rho is 1. And therefore, K, in principle, needs this extra piece, C prime, which in general may diverge, of course. So once you have this this expression, you also know how to write entanglement entropy in principle. So entanglement entropy for your region will be given just from the definition, which is trace rho log rho. And rho, you have to remember that this is its definition, and minus log rho is basically k. I will forget 2 pi, okay? So what you will get just expectation value of k, because log rho is minus k. Now, and this guy on a sphere, you can think about it as some path integral on a sphere. So this is a path integral on a sphere with insertion of k. So phi I will denote Euclidean action that depends on your fields and, of course, on the background. So now, of course, here it's a little bit of a problem because we do not know what is C prime. But we can use the idea that that I and Vlad developed last year. So we can instead take some derivatives, consider derivatives of S. And this is what I want to do, because we want to see how S changes when we change radius of the sphere. So to change radius of the sphere, it basically the same as to do constant Weyl rescaling. Okay? So what we will do, so let us just differentiate, take the following derivative of the entanglement entropy with respect to the metric. Okay, you have two objects to differentiate. One of them is I, another one is K. So when you differentiate I, what you will get, it depends on your definition, favorite definition of the energy momentum tensor. I will use this one. So with the minus, so you will get g mu nu x times k. Okay, and then of course you have to differentiate k, but this in, but this this derivative will vanish just because density matrix is normalized. So you can, so if you just take derivative of this identity, you will have zero on the right hand side, and on the left hand side you will have expectation value of the variation of k. So it should vanish. So this is what you get. So this is what we call, I and Vlad called flow equation of the entanglement entropy under change in the geometry. Now we have to just, what we need to do, we just need to contrast it with g mu nu. So this will give you trace, okay? And integrate over all of the space-time is factor 2. So let me remove here factor 2 and integrate over SD on both sides over the insertion of this point. And then what you see, what you have on the left-hand side is just constant while rescaling or change of the radius. So what you get here, you get the following equation, R ds dr equals minus integral sd txk. Okay, this is the equation. So normally, so what so far people do, they interpret this R as RG parameter. Why this is RG parameter? Because you have nice space, R, sphere. This is the only scale. So R in principle fixes the RG parameter, the RG scale. And then what you see here is just a flow of entanglement entropy under RG rescaling. Yes?
Do you not integrate on the measure changes under that scale?
What, which measure? Well, it includes change in the measure, of course, the square root of g.
I meant the path integral measure.
You mean the anomaly?
Yeah.
You need, well, in three dimensions, there is no trace anomaly.
Ah, okay, so you're in three dimensions.
Well, yeah, specifically, it will be for three dimensions. Okay. So now, yeah, so now the problem. No, in principle, you have to just plug in expression for k and compute. Okay. So the problem is that here we integrate over all space-time, in particular, t sometimes will collide with k. Will collide with k, and you will have to think what to do with, in such a situation. How to account for all these contact terms. So, but there is a nice way to get around this problem here in this particular two-point function. The point is the following. It is based on the Ward identity. So since S entanglement entropy is a functional, of course, of your data, of your system, and it is certainly scalar under reparametrization, it means that if you do just reparametrization of your metric, so g mu nu goes to g mu nu plus g mu some v nu, some vector, okay? So S should not change. Obviously. So then, so it means that under this change, which is basically in the metric ds dg, okay, ds dg mu nu. So let me just write down this standard equation. Final equation, it will be clear. So this is the variation, okay? Let me write it this way, ds, and it equals to minus integral d dx of g, okay, g mu v nu times ds d g mu nu, okay? So this is, it is, I mean, including this minus sign, this is delta g mu nu with indices up. This is what it is. Now, but this guy we already computed, this is txk. So this one is g mu nu x. Okay, up to square root of g and factors of 2, it doesn't matter. Now, if you do integration by parts and take into account that v is basically arbitrary, you will get the following quad identity. G mu nu x, k equals 0. So it should be identically satisfied. So there are no delta functions and blah, blah, blah. So this should be compared to the two-point, to the quad identity for the two-point function of the stress tensor. So the two-point function for the stress tensor will not satisfy it identically. It will not be equal identically to zero. You will have some delta functions. So let me write it down, final expression. It is taken from Osborne Shore. Osborne Shore in the end of 90s basically studied A theorems or C theorems on maximally symmetric spaces, so we can find a lot of the information there. So this is how it looks like. Give you, let me just write final answer, and then it will become clear what we need. So it's d nu delta d xy t alpha beta plus 2 e sigma delta sigma alpha delta rho beta delta d xy. These are delta functions. And t rho nu expectation value at x. Okay, it just basically it's very simple identity. You start from this word identity. This word identity you get from the requirement that that effective action is scalar under reparametrization. You just differentiate it with respect to metric. This is what you get. Okay, so there are some delta functions. So of course we are not interested in the most general case. We are interested in the spherical case. In the spherical case, all these t's are constant on a sphere in general. So in general, this t mu nu is minus some function of your couplings times metric g mu nu x. And therefore, the right-hand side very much simplifies a lot. It's just some derivatives of the delta function, some symmetric derivatives of the delta function times this constant. And so you can modify, you can define new two-point function. Which Osborne and Shore call conserved two-point function. it just basically this two-point function. Well, I did not define this one, but this one is just secondary up to square roots of g, is just second derivative of your effective action. Okay, let me write it down. So t mu nu t alpha beta. And y by definition, so you have square root gx, square root gy, some 4 second variation of your effective action with respect to g mu nu x, g mu nu g alpha beta y. So this is how this object is defined. So you can plus a over d r to power d, r is the radius of your sphere, then you have g mu alpha g mu beta plus g mu beta g mu alpha and plus g mu nu g alpha beta, then you have delta function. So basically it just this expression, you just bring it to the left hand side and you take out derivative d mu, and this is what you get. Okay, so, and this object is conserved in the sense that if you apply derivative, covariant derivative, delta mu, you will get zero. Okay? And of course, it has all the symmetries and blah. Therefore, it means that you have to compute this object, a t mu nu k, or this right-hand side, you have to use this conserved two-point function. Okay? So we are about to get the main equation, and then I will stop bothering you with some technical details. So where is time?
Half an hour.
Okay, good.
Is this renormalization of the stress tensor, or is it a redefinition of the two-point function?
It's just redefinition, I would say.
So you're not changing the operators?
I change only in the limit of x equals y.
Okay.
When x is different from y, there is no problem. Okay, it's just modification in this limit. And the only motivation again is this one, because I have to have zero identically. So So let me just schematically explain, rather than present all these steps. So now I want to just express the right-hand side in terms of this A. Okay, in terms of this A, the right-hand side. So the bottom, in the bottom line, this is the equation that we will get, and I will explain actually how to get it. So the, in the, at the end of the day, this is the equation that we will get. it equals to omega d. This is some area of the d-dimensional sphere, unit sphere, r d plus 1 over d, d, dr of a over r to power d. Okay, so this is what we will get. So how do we get it? You get it in the following. So the shortest way to get it is the following. You just take this equation, you apply this operator, r d dr to both sides, r d dr. So in our space, recall that r d dr for our space, r d dr, it is basically minus 2 g mu nu d d g mu nu. So when you apply this operator to the left-hand side here, and use the definition of the energy momentum tensor, you will get some, you will get two-point function of the energy momentum tensor and some delta functions also, just because when derivatives collide. Now, and r d dr to the right-hand side is very simple to apply because r d dr of g mu nu is just 2 g mu nu. Okay, so you will get all kind of quantities, and one of them will be like that. So the rest you will just transfer to the left-hand side, and the left-hand side will be just some expression, this t conserved, I mean some expression like that, t conserved. And then all you need to do is just contract it with Killing vectors. Oh, of course, I forgot to explain. This Xi is Killing vector associated with rotation, and N is just normal to the surface. So you have to just contract and integrate. Okay? So if you do it, all the steps are very simple. You just have to write them down. So you do it, this is what you will get at the end. Okay? So what we have now is change of entanglement entropy related to A, which, and A is actually one point function, okay? So now you can first of all do a check what happens at the fixed point, for instance, okay? So at the fixed point, A, this A is related to trace anomaly. You just take trace, you get A. Trace equals A, this is a trace anomaly. And and trace anomaly, of course, for is known how it looks like. So say in general dimension, trace anomaly, T has the following structure schematically, okay? You have some B-type anomaly, which is some combination of Weyl tensors. Say in four dimensions, this is just Weyl square. In six dimensions, it will be Weyl cube and some combinations, contractions of Weyl cube and also Weyl box Weyl, roughly. Okay, so it will be Weyl, let me schematically, it's just Weyl to to power d over 2, okay, just schematically. Okay, this is how many Weyls you have. Sometimes you can have less Weyls, but then you have derivatives, okay? So what is important is that you have here d over 2, six d derivatives, okay? So all these guys are completely irrelevant for this space because you take at most one derivative, so there will be at least one Weyl survive, and sphere is conformally flat, therefore these all guys are completely irrelevant, okay? Therefore they all are zero in our case. Even if you take derivative, it will be still zero. And then you have also, so I use the following convention, you have also A-type anomaly. So A-type anomaly, okay, recall which convention I'm using. So this is minus 2, minus 1 to power d over 2. A, this is, okay, A, A, central charge A times E Euler characteristic, okay, of your manifold. So so this is what it is, and this Euler characteristic is constant on the sphere, of course, because it's maximally symmetric space. So therefore you you know this A at the fixed point, and if you just substitute, it's very simple. So what you will get at the end, you will get, so this is at the fixed point, you will get just known results for entanglement, known result for entanglement entropy. So at the fixed point, it just becomes 4 minus 1 d over 2 minus 1, yes, times A. Okay, this is one. Of course, for odd dimensional case, this vanishes because there is no trace anomaly, so it will be 0. I will be interested again in 3 dimensions very soon. So, okay. So now the question is the following. Now, actually, at this point, you have to be a little bit worried for the following reason. A, by definition, is something finite. Something finite, because this is just a one-point function on a sphere, and T is just variation of the effective action with respect to metric. So by definition, it's finite. So A is finite. So everything is finite here. And then you may question, okay, where are divergences? Okay. So in odd dimensions, it is easy to answer. Again, when you look in the following way, where is the flow equation? So this is the flow equation. Actually, already at this point, you may have some questions. Because you can ask, where is the area law, for instance? Okay, where it disappeared. So in the same sense that Cassini-Huerta-Meyers result S entanglement equals free energy on a sphere, so this result should be interpreted for universal part on both sides. In the same way here, this equation should be also interpreted as equality for universal part of on both of entanglement entropy. Because when we do all these variations, okay, we are not really careful about doing transformation of the cutoff. We are not really saying anything about cutoff. So therefore, this equality and this equality should be also only interpreted for universal parts. You should trust this equality is only for universal parts. Secondly, it is still, I didn't answer the question. I didn't resolve the puzzle. Because for even dimensions, we still have logs. So the question is, where are logs? So let me give you a simple example, and it will become clear where logs are hiding. Okay, simple example, you just take free field on a sphere with mass and consider trivial RG flow when the flow is from massless theory, okay, massless theory conformally coupled scalar, for instance, or massless Dirac, to empty theory, because in the deep IR, your mass is, all degrees of freedom completely decouple, and therefore you have empty theory in this case. So in this case, again, it's everyone can do this computation, so let me just sketch the steps. So you know energy momentum tensor for Dirac massless field. Okay, so you take its trace. So what you get after you drop equations of motion, of course, you get the following expression. This is for fermion. Free fermion, okay, a Dirac fermion. Okay, so T is minus M psi bar psi. So you can ask, of course, why I'm doing fermions, not scalar field. Okay, because, scalar field, you may have some questions at the end because of, if you take the limit of flat space, R goes to infinity in the results that I will show you now, you will not get the standard universal area law. I will comment about it a little bit later, but let us consider just free field, free massless, free massive fermion. This is what it is. Now, psi bar psi, just wave of some operator on the sphere. Okay, you can imagine it was computed many times by many authors. So what you get, so psi bar psi, so I use dimensional, so let me just write it how it looks like. It's minus 2 d over 2 gamma d over 2 plus I m r times gamma d over 2 minus I m r over r to power d minus 1 4 pi d over 2 sine pi d over 2. Sorry for these details, but let me just gamma d over 2. And you have also sinh of pi m. So this is a two-point function. Now, this two-point function is completely finite. Of course, to get it, I have to take Green's function, take the limit of coincident points. So I dropped here all kinds of divergences, power law divergences. But this is OK because they are not universal. Okay, forget about them, or think about it in dimensional regularization, you do not have them. So this is what you get, but unfortunately, or fortunately, in even dimensions, you have logarithmic divergences, okay? In odd dimensions, it's completely finite, of course.
Is
yes.
It real?
It is. Take a complex conjugate.
Oh, this. Okay.
Oh.
Thanks.
Okay. And, so you get, you, so, okay, so in even dimensions, you have some logs, okay? Now, so these logs, of course, these are UV divergences, so you can do this expansion, okay? You will get some expansion around some even D, so you will have log. And the pole structure, let me just write down the leading coefficient, and then you can substitute, so you can interpret it. If this is the definition, A minus A over D times G mu nu, and we take trace, this is just minus A. Okay. Of course, I will address this point that here A is finite. Here it looks like it is not, but let me, I will clean this issue. So so this is A. So you can just expand now this in, I mean, extract logarithmic term. So, and then substitute it into this formula, okay? This formula for A. So what you will get, let me just write down only one expression. So what you will get r ds dr, and then I will clean this issue of infinite, finite, blah, blah. R ds dr equals, so you will have minus 1 d over 2, so d minus 2, a sigma. A sigma is just area of the entangling surface, just sphere, so just a spherical factor. D minus 2, this is dimensionless factor, over 6. 2 pi d minus 2 over 2 times gamma d over 2, okay? So here is 1, okay? Or let me write it this way. So here we have m d minus 2. Then you have all kind of corrections, curvature corrections. So you basically have, you go down in powers of m, and instead you compensate, so you have d minus 4 over r square. Some number, okay, which I do not write, plus and etc. Okay, so this guy is very well known in the literature. This is just the universal law, the universal area law. So it times log. Here is the pole. So pole is associated with log divergence. So it's log delta. So this guy is just something that is well known in the literature, saying for flat space and for flat plane in flat space, it was computed again by many authors, and this is the so-called universal area law. Okay, and it is completely hidden. It is hidden actually in the divergence of the two-point function here. Okay, now this guy also has very simple interpretation. It's just some curvature correction to the area law. So all these terms have very nice clear interpretation and known in the literature. Actually, this one is not known, but what we did, we just computed it using, again, formalisms that I and Vlad developed, because to get these divergences, this is divergences, you expect the divergences come from the entangling, from the vicinity of the entangling surface. So therefore, what you can just take your metric, the Sitter metric, expand close to the entangling surface, okay, to leading order, it will be just some waveguide geometry. And then there are some curvature corrections, and then you can just apply, let me skip this step, you can just use what Einblatt developed for, and get exactly this coefficient. So in other words, all the divergences of the entanglement entropy are actually hidden here. But what we normally do when we substitute this A, when we think about this A, we basically do subtractions. This is what we do. In this case, for instance, you're supposed to complain and say, look, this is not a full energy momentum tensor. We should include also some cosmological constant renormalization. Or in other words, we should add to the action counter terms of the form, say in four dimensions or in D dimensions, this is the counter terms that you can add to the action. Okay. So in other words, by adding counter terms in the action, in this case, it's just cosmological constant, or also curvature corrections, you can also have M, some integral over the sphere in the action. In the action, you may add such terms. M, D, say, minus 2 times R, curvature. Okay. And and completely regularize our energy momentum tensor. So we can just subtract them, and instead we will have some logs in the two-point function. So we will subtract divergences, we will get regularized two-point function, and get some logs. So these logs are completely finite. And also the left-hand side, so therefore there is no contradiction. I mean, these divergences associated with entanglement entropy, they are actually there in this A. It just, they are just hidden because by definition here, what we do, we think about all possible subtraction, all possible renormalizations. Of course, energy momentum tensor operator does not need renormalization, but when I say renormalization, I mean all coupling constants in the action and all composite operators. But that you have in the definition of the energy momentum tensor, but the energy momentum tensor needs no more subtractions than that. And therefore, so this is completely finite object, but logs that are sitting here are actually related to UV divergences of entanglement entropy. Okay, we just basically subtracted them. Now something funny that happens in odd dimensions. So in odd dimensions, what time? I will have to say something about F theory. So in odd dimensions, what you get. Okay, let me just do it schematically. So this is odd, even D. So in odd dimensions, if you do it.
You have 15 minutes. So.
Okay, good. So in odd dimensions, what you do, you could say, okay, in odd dimensions, we also are aware of all kinds of universal terms, finite terms. So how they look like in this case. So what you will get, you will also have some universal area law, known universal area law. In this case, universal area law. Okay, this is something that you compute using, say, Ringler space. Okay, but it will be multiplied by this funny function. Okay, pi mr, this is what will happen. So our interpretation of this fact is the following. In principle, in the Sitter space, if you take r very large, so this is 1, roughly. So in other words, for very large r, when the temperature is very close to 0, the Sitter temperature, this tangent is exponentially close to 1. So therefore, this factor is a sort of thermal correction to the universal area law that you get in that you are very well familiar in the case of Ringler space. Okay. So now let me just tell you a little bit about epsilon. So then you could say, okay, you have this nice expression. Let us try to use it. Say, let us try to use it to prove F theorem, right? But then you need some C function, okay? So C function, let me recall you what is C function, what C function was. This is in three dimension, in flat space. So in flat space, so, so in flat space, the C function was R ds dr, this is renormalized entanglement entropy, minus S. Okay, and had some, and S Cassini and Huerta proved it has very nice structure under nice flow, I mean, under in flat space. So you can actually, now once you have it, you can even compute this A for in odd dimension for scalar field or for fermion you can compute A, you can just calculate this object analytically, okay? And you can check what happens when R goes to infinity, I mean, how if it is monotonic or not. So while it, so it is not monotonic. Okay, it's not true, it should not be surprising, because in principle we do not expect a flat space result to hold on a sphere. But this is unfortunate, because then the question is, okay, what is the C function to use on a sphere? And unfortunately, we do not have a candidate as of now. Now, furthermore, what is interesting is that in on a sphere, we did not encounter some non-stationarity problem like Klebanov and his collaborators, I think Pufu, Savdi, someone else that I probably forgot. So they basically explored entanglement entropy for a circle. They took free field theory in flat space, circle in flat space, and they considered entanglement, renormalized entanglement entropy, and they reported about some non-stationarity that they observed there. of the C function at the fixed point. Here we do not see it, but there is no monotonicity. Now, why we do not see it? I think there is a very simple explanation, because in flat space there are all kind of IR issues. It's a infinite, it's a space with infinite volume, and there are always IR issues. Sphere is a very nice space, and it completely regularizes everything that happens in IR. Therefore, basically, it solves completely the problem of non-stationarity of some singularity. But unfortunately, there is no monotonicity. Okay. So the question is, of course. So let me just tell you one more sentence about how to do it in even dimensions. What you do in even dimensions. In even dimensions, when you subtract these divergences, you are left with some logs and some ambiguities, ambiguous coefficients. Because why there are some ambiguities? Because it depends how you subtract exactly. So in other words, it depends what kind of scheme or subtraction scheme you choose. So therefore, you have some constants, ambiguous, and you also have mu renormalization scale mu. And then the question is how to fix these ambiguities, because entanglement entropy certainly is not ambiguous. It's just something you compute and you get. So one way to fix it, at least in this case, is the following. You can implement the ideas of Latour and Forte and Latour of decoupling. So basically, you in this particular case of free field theories, you just require that phi square, for instance, in the limit when r goes to infinity or m goes to infinity, and then in the deep IR when all degrees of freedom actually are irrelevant, you just require that this goes to zero. And also, you can also require that T mu nu goes to zero as R goes to infinity. Okay, so these conditions fix actually ambiguities in this subtraction scheme. And then you can evaluate this A for free field theories and study flows, and basically you get reasonable results that agree with the literature that you get anomalies. Zero in the IR, anomaly in the UV, so everything is nice. But again, there is unfortunate thing is that there is no C function so far. Okay, so let me. So then you can actually try to address F theorem from a little bit different angle. You may recall that on a space, maximally symmetric space, in particular in flat space, for instance, two-point function of the energy-momentum tensor has only two independent structures. It is called zero spin part and spin two part. So schematically, where is it? Okay, so this is, so I'm using notation of Osborne-Shore. You can find it in their paper. So schematically, this is how it looks like. Equals gamma zero mu nu alpha beta xy. This is spin zero part. Let me just finish it and then I will explain. Mu nu alpha beta xy. Now, what is nice about spin two part, it is traceless. So you take trace, it just disappears. And this is what you need for the flow equation. for the flow equation, okay, doesn't matter. If you remember, it was something, the flow equation was something like that. So this is trace. Okay, so therefore, all you need is just this part, spin zero part. This is, does not matter. Now, this spin zero part is has very simple form. This gamma zero mu nu alpha beta has very simple form. Minus g mu nu plus d minus 1 over r square g mu nu. So let me call this operator S mu nu. This is operator. Acts on some scalar function of geodesic distance. And then you have same operator acts on, so this one acts on point X. On point X, this is on point X. This is X, and this one at point Y. Okay, and this F0 theta, these are all results from Osborne-Shore. And basically what they did, they basically generalized the ideas of Friedan-Latour, Forte-Latour-Friedan. In flat space, they generalized it to maximally symmetric curved space. So integral mu 0 to infinity d mu times c naught mu times g mu theta, where this guy is just free field propagator of mass mu. Okay, so this is how it looks like. Now, as you can see, because since you have to take trace to substitute it here, okay, the only part that is important is this gamma zero, and therefore the only one spectral function, c zero. Okay, so you can substitute it here, substitute this result, and get something nice in terms of spectral function. So let me write this nice formula. Well, nice, of course, it depends on your standards. It's just compact. This is why I call it nice. Maybe it is not so nice. Sorry, I lost it. So somewhere in the notes. No, where is it? Sorry about that. Okay. Okay, it doesn't matter. I need it. Here it is. So what you get after you substitute, you get the following expression. You get r ds dr equals minus d minus 1 gamma d over 2 over pi d minus 2 over 2 a sigma. Then you have integral d mu, mu naught to infinity of 1 plus d over r square. This is conformal coupling plus mu square. This is curvature. Okay, you can basically have something r mu square plus some d times d, I don't remember, over 4, something like that. It doesn't matter. I don't remember exactly this factor. Times c naught. Okay, so this is the expression, general expression. Now you may say, okay, we are done. We proved something, because here we have to consider just constant part in the entanglement, because we throw away, we completely forget about area law. Okay, so this is not universal. So this is just the derivative of the finite part. And this finite derivative of the finite part is always positive, because c naught is positive function, since it's just because of reflection positivity on the sphere. So c naught is positive. So and then everything is positive. So you get, so that's great, because so derivative is always has always all this time the same sign. And that means that there is some relation between finite part in UV and finite part in IR. So maybe this is a proof. So this is not a proof, because first of all, the sign is wrong. So this is one. So then you will get wrong conclusion. Secondly, why it fails? Because when you see that UV fixed point, then of course the finite part has only constant, just this universal constant. Universal constant, I mean, so you have something like R over delta plus C naught. Okay? But when you when you go to the IR fixed point, oh, let me just mention that what I'm going to tell you about IR fixed point appears in the paper by, a recent paper by Cassini and his students. I don't remember the name. And it will also appear in the paper that will show up, appear soon, by Rob Myers, Maria Huerta, Horacio Cassini, and Alex Yale. So, but when you go to the deep IR, then you may have some extra garbage sitting here at the fixed point in IR. So this is SUV. Okay. Now SIR, think about just free field. So free field, there is always this area law, which we draw, but there is also this finite part MR. Okay. This is just area law, but without log. And plus some constant, let me call it C, so this is UV, and this is CIR, okay? So this guy appears, so if you go just a little bit from UV fixed point, this guy shows up, and then it stays there forever. It does not vanish, okay? Now, and therefore, but this is the universe, this is something, this is the piece that has to do with some F theorem. This is this constant. So you have to actually subtract this MR. You have to get rid of it in odd dimensions. So to get, actually, this is what renormalized entanglement entropy does. So when you take R dS dR minus S, it exactly subtracts this irrelevant garbage. Okay. But first of all, it will not work that way on a curved. This is in flat space on curved manifold. And secondly, it is not monotonic again. So therefore, this inequality or this monotonicity is related to some universal, interesting universal part and some extra garbage. And now, why I call it a garbage? Because everyone calls it universal, so why I call it a garbage? So I call it garbage for the following reason. When you are close to UV fixed point, then I do understand why this is universal and everything is nice. Now, when you are deep in IR, this MR is huge, just it's a huge number. And in principle, there is no way to distinguish this number from this UV. I mean, it's all UV, it's UV scale. For you're sitting in IR, this MR is, M is UV scale for you. So therefore, I mean, I don't think you can actually disentangle, I mean, from the perspective of low energy observer, I do not think you can disentangle this huge MR from this another huge number, which is 1 over delta. But it's, of course, a matter of taste and interpretation. Okay, therefore, in the IR, it's actually garbage, I think. Okay? so, yes, so this is why also this approach.
Why doesn't it just throw it into the first term, which also goes like R?
This one, yeah, right. So, but what I was saying is that here, on the left-hand side, it's just finite part. And when you do, especially in the free field theory computation, you also, this finite part also keeps this MR.
I see.
And there is no reason to, subtract it.
The
so basically,
finite
this is what
prescription, which is hidden in all your equations, is the problem.
Yes. So therefore, so let me just summarize. I guess I have to quit more or less, right?
So
yes.
The prescription in all your formulas is the universal part.
Yes, universal, but it's this is what people call universal. So it's
that's law
for finite in odd dimensions.
If you were in even dimensions, would you call the universal part log plus finite or just log?
Just log. Yes, just log.
So why can't you do the same thing in higher dimensions?
Why I'm seeking in? Why you ask why I'm not applying all this stuff in even dimensions? Well, if you go to the point is that if you go to higher dimensions, so first of all, I do not know. Let us say it that way. This integral, you have to take care. You have to make sure that this integral converges actually, right? Because if it diverges, I mean, there is no reason to apply it. So indeed, it converges for three dimensions. But if you approach four dimensions, there are situations that will diverge, actually. Okay? And even in three dimensions, there are some, you know, what we did, we have sometimes logs in odd dimensions. So therefore, this integral will exhibit sometimes divergences even in three dimensions. So in other words, you have to be very careful about the divergences here. So I think I have to more or less quit. So let me just summarize. So unfortunately, we do not have, as you see, I didn't present any proof. But we do understand better, we do understand at least flow or what is entanglement entropy in terms of simple objects like one-point function on a sphere. Okay. So I guess no questions, I was very clear. Okay.
So can you generalize your flow equation to more general entangling surfaces? Which
yeah, well, basically what we did with Vlad was actually for general surfaces.
Okay.
It was not, but specifically when you want to carry out concrete computations, you need to stick to some nice geometries. But in principle, it is generic, yes.
You expressed like an emotional attitude. Unfortunately, we don't get a C theorem. What? I don't know about, what would you do if you did have a theorem? Why do you want this
atomic
property of the...
Okay, because I started from saying that I want to understand, so there is this proof by Cassini in three dimensions, but it uses completely general, idea, say, strong subadditivity, and I do not really know what does it mean in terms of field theory, in terms of correlators, field theory language.
Right.
So I would like to understand to understand this result in terms of field theory.
So you're saying you can't substantiate the result by a better calculation?
Yes, exactly.
But and what about the background point? Why does one want in general a monotonicity?
Basically you want to study general structure of the field theory. So you want to, for instance, claim, understand whether a renormalization group flow is irreversible or reversible. So in principle, people today say because of the result in two dimensions and because of the result by Komargotsky-Schwinner in four dimensions, so there is certain irreversibility of the flow. Intuitively you do understand it a priori, right? Because you, what is RG flow? It's averaging, right? You do some averaging. So you start from very nice UV field theory, and then you do some averaging, and you forget some information. Then in principle, it should be true, right, that it is irreversible.
Isn't it coming from the reason you expect monotonicity is entanglement across energy scales or something?
Yes.
And so, but that picture really is the unregulated version. I mean, if you throw out these parts because they're not universal, but aren't they really the parts that are underlying the picture?
Okay, so let me then tell you what my understanding of this RG flow entanglement. Okay, so my understanding is the following. So this is your region, say R, right? This is your region. And you have all kind of scales. Some scales are much shorter than R, right? Much shorter than R, and this is, for instance, UV scale. And this is something that is responsible for all kind of UV structure, right? Some scales are of order R, and this is the interesting scales, because much shorter scales correspond to UV structure. Much of order R correspond to finite entanglement. And if the scale is much larger than R, then basically, it also contributes more or less nothing because the region is point-like, right, for such scales. So therefore, you have to concentrate your intention on scales around this R, because much shorter scales are just something standard UV structure, UV universal structure. This is, they produce divergences, what you call. So in other words, if you are observer at scale R, very short scales, you will say this is UV, and they produce divergences. Scales of order R produce finite part, and much larger are irrelevant. Therefore, practically, if you could do it, you had to compute effective density matrix on this scale R, effective density matrix, by ignoring very short scales, because you say they produce UV. I mean, they are something. I mean, something here for you, okay? UV. And if you had such a construction, effective density matrix for this scale R, then this will exactly will describe the flow of entanglement.
Right. But why would you expect that flow to be monotonic?
Well, as in three dimensions, I would say just because, let us say, in UV and IR, you know that there is some relation between, there is example, first of all, for this monotonic flow, right, in three dimensions. So it's monotonic. And in four dimensions, we also know that entanglement entropy is related to central charges, right? And there is a proof that there is some monotonic C function. So maybe since entanglement entropy is equal to central charges at the fixed point, so maybe you can construct also C function or using entanglement that will describe, interpolate between these charges that have very clear inequality. So it's a hope, okay?
Can I ask one more follow-up on that? So when you point out then that you're not recovering or not able to substantiate the Cassini-Huerta result,
yes,
by an actual field theory, a regulating factor, so what, how do you interpret that inability? Do you say their result really refers to unregulated divergent quantities that are somehow maybe meaningful if there exists a Lorentz invariant regulator? Or what's the attitude? What lesson do you draw about their result?
Well, I would say their result rests on on very particular construction in flat space, right? So here I'm jumped to curved space. So therefore, what worked in flat space, you do not, it's not necessarily true on curved manifold, right?
Yeah.
Well, at least, again, naive approach did not work so far.
Could they apply their approach on a curve?
I don't know. It's not obvious at all. How do you do this, all these boosts and all this construction on a sphere? I didn't try to do it. Maybe we should ask Horacio to work hard and do this. I do not know. So I would say that maybe you should just look. For instance, I did not say that, but this equality between entanglement entropy and thermal entropy in the Sitter space holds all the time, not necessarily at the fixed point, by construction, right? So thermal entropy in the Sitter space, well, it is also a little bit weird object, but in general, it's thermal entropy, so it satisfies some thermodynamic inequalities. So if thermal entropy satisfies some inequalities on such a curved space, then because of equality of thermal and entanglement, it will be automatically imply inequality for entanglement entropy. We just tried something and it didn't work, but it doesn't mean that it will not work, right? Maybe there is some way to do it. Yes.
The fact that you could extract the entanglement entropy from the expectation value of O, yes, can only do that. Does that only hold for spherical entangling surfaces on a sphere, or does that hold more general?
Well, I would say universal law. We expect that it works in general, right?
Because you were considering spherical entangling surfaces.
You mean from the one-point function?
Yeah.
This is maybe. Maybe, I don't know, but I think it, so far there is only reason to believe that it holds only for spheres inside spheres, because otherwise it's not clear what is the relation between one-point function and this DSDR, right? Because, the whole computation rests very hard on the fact that there is rotational symmetry, right, on the one-hand side, and also rests on the fact that we are on a sphere, so this is why it is a constant. And so it's, I would say, people will say this is fine-tuned, okay? So it's true, it's fine-tuned, but the reason is very clear, because if you take it a little bit not spherical or out of symmetry, analytic computation becomes very hard. But it's still a little bit surprising that all entanglement entropy divergences, all the universal structures, are somehow hidden in this particular case in the one-point function. And the one-point function in this particular example, it's related to the normalization of the cosmological constant. Okay.
Any more questions? All right, thank you.